safety first with danger tape.
Welcome to Safety First with Danger Tate. I'm Tate, and this is my interview series where I talk to really cool people about the cool things that they do. Our guest today is one of the founders of the Worldwide Women of Whitewater. It's a nonprofit dedicated to getting more women into the sport. And she's also the co-founder of Canyon River Instruction based in Salida, Colorado. So our guest today is Alicia MacArthur, and we're so excited. Here she is. Welcome.
Hello, hello.
So excited that you're here today. Obviously, you're just a wealth of information. You've been in the rafting industry since 1999. Is that right?
Professionally.
Okay, when did you start privately?
So my parents were private boaters, so I grew up rafting. My dad had me in a PFD by the time I was 3 years old, so 84.
Okay, wow. Okay, my question with that is, like, when you started as a kid, did you immediately fall in love with it, or did it kind of take you finding it, like, on your own to fall in love? Because that's what happened with me.
So when I was 12, my parents got divorced and my dad quit boating, and I suddenly realized that it was this massive, like, void in my life. And like, that was when I realized that, like, oh my God, I love the river. I need the river. All I want to do is go rafting. And I made friends with a girl whose dad owned a rafting company, and I was like, take me rafting. And then when I was 15, I realized that was all I ever wanted to do. And so I told my friend's dad that, and he kind of took me under his wing as his personal trainee. And then the summer I turned 18, he like paid for my certifications and stuck me in a boat and told me to guide.
What was the company?
6 years ago. Far-Flung Adventures out of Taos, New Mexico.
Oh, okay. So what river were you on?
The Rio Grande. Okay. So like the Rio Grande race course and the Taos box.
Great. Okay. I've had some friends guide out there, but I've never been. So I'm excited to go out there one day. And now you're based out of Salida. And what's kind of like, what's your day to day?
Oh God, that's a really loaded question. variable. Okay. like you mentioned, I own Canyon River Instruction with my husband, Alan, and we are we're licensed here on the Arkansas River like a normal rafting company, but we don't operate like a normal rafting company. So instead of like taking guests on commercial trips, all we do is teach. We teach a ton of rowing. We teach a ton of swiftwater rescue. A large portion of our clientele are private boaters that are just wanting to get into whitewater themselves. But I also do a ton of professional development with raft guides, both based here out of CRI, and I travel to work with rafting companies all over. So.
Oh, cool. Yeah. With that, like, how do you find instructors, or is it you and Alan teaching everything?
No, we have a cadre of about six instructors, and a handful of part-timers that come and go. Alan and I teach some, but mostly we've got our instructors on the water every day. Honestly, like, building that cadre of instructors has been one of the most challenging pieces of this business. Just because, with guides, like, you can run a guide school, advertise like, hey, learn to be a raft guide. Mm-hmm. And, that's fairly simple. But for me, I'm looking for folks who are already whitewater professionals that are looking to move on in their career, that are maybe like, have been guiding for 10 or so years and are looking to do something a little different. Or folks who are, passionate about teaching and instruction. We require that they're all ACA certified as instructors so that they have that like foundation of being a good teacher and the whole outdoor ed process, kind of the experiential learning thing. And so, yeah, for me, it's, and then the other thing is that we teach a ton of all women's clinics. And so not only am I looking for like a very specific type of raft guide who wants to teach and wants to move up in their career, but also then a woman raft guide who wants to teach and wants to move on in their career. And so, we've got an amazing staff right now, but it's definitely like, finding those instructors has been challenging, and it's,
with,
been a
kind
process.
With the ACA curriculum and, you know, your view of it over the period of time that you've been in it. Have you seen any positive trends, or what are the cool things that are changing within it?
Ooh, that's another really big question. lots. So I have been involved with the American Canoe Association since 2016 was when I first took my first instructor certification course. And since then, I've actually been heavily involved with the rafting committee on the ACA. I'm the current chair. And we've updated the curriculum. We wrote a level 5 curriculum, because when I first started, it was only up to level 4. So now there's a level 5 curriculum, which weirdly means class 4.
I was going to say, I'm not actually familiar with the levels. So can you give a little context into what that
is? Yeah, absolutely. So the ACA utilizes paddling disciplines of all sorts, from coastal to recreation to whitewater. And so levels within those paddling disciplines don't correlate with whitewater rapid ratings. So basically, like, level 1 means flat water. And level 2 means moving water, which in the whitewater world is class 1. And then level 3 means class 2 in relation to whitewater disciplines. Level 3 means class 2. Level 4 means class 3. Level 5 means class 4. And it's just because, you know, the ACA does so much more than just whitewater. And level 1 across the board is non-moving water.
Got it. Okay. So adding that level 5, has that just upped the rivers that you're able to teach on, or has it made it that guides can now go guide harder rivers?
So for the instructor side of things, it's definitely, you know, now you're like legally protected to be teaching on class 4 whitewater. If you are an ACA instructor using ACA insurance teaching, you can legally teach on class 4 whitewater. And so that's been actually really neat. And I've watched the pool of level 5 instructors grow. And I've worked kind of like my career through the ACA as well. And so I train and certify instructors and instructor trainers, I can think. And so it's, you know, and rafting is one of the relatively newer disciplines within the ACA. And so, you know, one of my big goals has been to kind of like grow that discipline, because like so often, and I think we were maybe touched on this before the show started, is that, you know, the best guides don't always make the best instructors, because you can be really good at what you do, but that doesn't mean you're really good at explaining what you do and teaching that and sharing that knowledge. Mm-hmm. And so often, you know, a guide who's doing a good job will suddenly be told that they're teaching guide school this year, and they've never been taught how to teach. They don't have a background in education or in experiential education. And they're just out there going, yeah, just do it like this.
Yeah.
Or just, that's just the way it is. Uh-huh. Or just follow me. Or, you know, and they don't have any foundation of how to actually teach. And so one of the reasons that I'm so passionate about the ACA is because it helps create instructors. And, you know, you don't have to have a background in formal education. You can, you know, be given this toolbox to take out on the river, and suddenly you can be running a guide school where your guide school trainees are like getting it as opposed to struggling. Mm-hmm. And so basically, like, if as a guide, you take an instructor course and you get given this toolbox of how to teach, you're teaching a more effective guide school. You're having, you know, trainees come out of guide school better guides, and then your company is running safer trips. Mm-hmm. And so go for it.
Well, it's really good to hear kind of that breakdown and the distinction of guide versus instructor, but that it's very possible to get there once you have the tools. What are some of the tools that you give the instructors? You know, like, what are the effective teaching methods that are being taught?
I mean, a lot of it is like really quite simple. Like, you know, one of our like kind of foundational concepts is just sell it, show it, do it, review it. Like, you know, why do you want to know this? Here, let me, you know, to grab their attention. Then here, let me like demonstrate it. Now you do it. Now let's review it.
Well, no, go for it. Well, I was just going to ask if you had a favorite thing that you teach, like raft lifting or wading or anything like that.
Actually, I think you nailed it. Flip and recovery is one of the things that I am absolutely most passionate about teaching. I love teaching flip and recovery. I was really honored to be invited to teach raft flip and recovery at the National Swiftwater Rescue Conference a couple of years ago, and that was really fun. Yeah. And it's like, it's just the kind of thing where it's, I think it's one of those enigmatic things that, that people get kind of worked up over, and A, they don't practice it enough. And B, it's like, it feels big, it feels scary. And there's a lot of stigma around it. And I know that like the industry as a whole is moving towards setting yourself up for success, rigging your boat smartly. And not just, you know, the old fashioned dude bro of you have to kind of muscle everything all the time in unseemly ways that even the strongest person can't do if they've just been recirced in a hole. So, but yeah, teaching flip and recovery is like hands down one of my, one of the things I'm most passionate about.
When you mentioned rigging your boat smartly, do you have any tips, like, three basic rules to follow or whatever for rigging a boat for like, let's say a multi-day.
So number one is always mitigate for entrapment. So when we put a raft on moving water, we have created an entrapment hazard. We add things to that raft, such as thwarts or perimeter lines or a frame so that we can row it. We are adding more entrapment hazards. So we are, like, just by nature of the sport, we are putting ourselves in an entrapment situation. But what we can do is be conscientious of that and mitigate for that. So we're looking for like gaps, spaces, loose straps, triangles, things like that. And the thing is like our paddle raft isn't going to function without thwarts, and our oar raft isn't going to function without a frame. So we have to have these things, and we're just going to do our best to mitigate for entrapment by making sure our raft is fully inflated, making sure our frame is tied down tightly and that we don't have any unnecessary gaps in it. And then the same thing goes for anything you rig on your raft, whether you're rigging something underneath to help you get on in case of a flip, or you're rigging gear for a multi-day, mitigate for entrapment, rig what you need and rig it tight and rig it svelte.
Okay, that's perfect. Simple. Yeah. Simple, but I love to overcomplicate things. So I'll be like, oh, but I really need this, or I really need that. Like, I was recently talking about a rafting trip I've got coming up, and my friend was like, well, the world is our oyster. We can bring whatever we want rafting. So I like the rig what you need.
I mean, having said that, I'll bring extra tutus, so, you know, okay, that's needed.
Which is totally what I was about to ask is, do you have a favorite like luxury treat yourself item that you'll bring on rafting trips?
Glitter, Echo Glitter, all day, every day.
Yes.
You know, tutus are always fun. Private trips, good scotch.
Oh, fun. Yes. And then do you have a favorite like safety thing that you're like, okay, let's say we don't have any safety gear, we need one safety thing. What's your number one?
I mean, your number one piece of a safety equipment is your brain. Situational awareness, being, you know, on top of it. But, you know, and I know I just said that I like to bring scotch on trips, but also like, you know, being like, I'm just going to say it's sober boating. That's not to say that, you know, I won't have a drink at lunch or my whiskey in the evenings, but you know, like, especially if I'm out there running hard whitewater, like I want my wits about me. And you know, so yeah, your brain is your number one piece of a safety equipment. Otherwise, I mean, whistle for communication. You know, I never go anywhere without a knife. I hope I never need it. Knock on wood if I haven't. But yeah, your brain is your number one piece of safety equipment.
I didn't see that coming. I wish I would have. But I love that. You mentioned one thing you mentioned the inflation of your raft, and I feel like there's a lot of controversy or opinions based on like what river you're running or things like that. In your mind, is it like you always want your raft totally like rock hard, or is there some give there?
Yeah. So something that you'll hear me say a lot is have a why behind your what. So always think through why you're doing things the way that you're doing them, and, you know, make your decision based on what your needs are, and then mitigate for the risk either way. So, you know, when that, and how that relates to raft inflation is basically when our raft is fully inflated to company specs, which is usually around 2.5 PSI, it has less give and it is stiffer, especially modern rafts. And you are less likely to have like an entrapment situation with like getting stuck under a thwart, for example. However, there are those low water middle fork trips where you're putting on under 2 feet and you've got the 16-foot gear barge and you're going to run that sucker a little soft. Or maybe a lot soft. But again, in that case, you are weighing your cost-benefit ratio of that. I know that I'm running my raft softer, which can lead to more entrapment hazard, but I'm doing so because I'm running very low water and I have the biggest, heaviest boat. And I, you know, like don't want to become a hazard to the group by getting stuck everywhere. And in that case, I'm also just being smart about how I'm rigging my gear. Again, I'm making sure that my straps are tight. I'm making sure that I'm not like shoving my feet in places where they can get stuck under the tubes, things like that. So weighing that cost benefit ratio, mitigating for the risk either way. So there's never, there's rarely black and white answers to anything, right? So like my one example of something that we kind of say in always and a never is locking carabiners, right? We always want to use locking carabiners on the river. And obviously I started boating in the 80s when there were no helmets and all the carabiners were non-locking. But just over time, like there's been enough incidences and there's been enough data that we've learned that, oh, non-locking carabiners pose a risk that is greater than their value when we can use locking carabiners. However, now that I've said that, you will still see kayakers out there with their non-locking carabiners on their cowtails. However, A, they're aware that they are wearing a hazard on the outside of their PFD, and B, that hazard is on a releasable system. So their cowtail is on their rescue harness, and that beaner is attached to a releasable point that's usually specifically in part of the PFD. So again, it's one of those things where like, that's one where I usually will say that one's pretty black and white, like no non-locking carabiners on the river, but then there's that one exception, but they're mitigating the risk of it. So, and you know, it's interesting. I like to say that rafting is like religion. Everyone has their way and it's the only way and everything else is blasphemy. But when in all reality, there are so many different ways to rig a raft. There are so many, you know, Buddha once said, there is many paths to enlightenment as there are people on the planet. And I don't know if there's that many ways to rig a raft, but as long as you are, you know, like applying those foundational concepts and weighing that cost benefit ratio and mitigating the risks either way, there you go.
I really appreciate you sharing all of that, because I also think, if anything, it just acknowledges that there are so many ways to do it and everyone is entitled to do it the way that they want. And to
as to long learn as they've the thought through they why.
As long as they've thought through why, right? And I feel like for people who are beginning to get into the sport, like, right, I've taught mostly like the class three rowing schools that Northwest does. And, you know, for a lot of people, it's like, A, some of them have never even touched oars before. Some of them have never, they've gone on one rafting trip and been like, okay, I want to do this. Some are just looking for like an interactive vacation, and a lot are looking for, how can I take my family safer? You know, how can I take care of my family on the river? But I do feel like the barrier to entry in this sport is kind of high, because it's like, it's the thing where you learn how much there is to learn, and then you get overwhelmed. And then you're like, well, screw it. I don't want to learn anything. I just want to go. And I think that that's where you see like either incidents happen or stuff like that. But the way that you're describing it is just so like community-based, learning-based. And it's all just like, we're going to figure it out, but you have to think about some of the things, which makes life more fun anyway. So I really appreciate the way that you're explaining everything. Thank you. I wanted to talk, obviously you've been kind of looking at things lately from an international perspective. Can you kind of share, you know, how did you get into rafting internationally and kind of where are you headed with that?
Oh, that's another really good question. you know, I'm not even really sure. So right now I'm the only level 5 instructor trainer educator for rafting in the ACA. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, just by, and I'm actively working towards creating more instructor trainers and instructor trainer educators, but, you know, for the time being, like I'm, you know, there are certain courses that I'm, you know, the only person who can teach. And so I think in some ways that kind of puts me in, you know, a little bit of demand. But I think even kind of prior to that, you know, for some reason I became known as someone who teaches women's clinics, and that's a whole nother story. I just started getting requests to work with rafting companies and other places. And, you know, and sometimes it's ACA related and sometimes it's not. And I mean, basically I'm also one of those people who likes to say yes to life.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So you know, even if it's something that like, you know, an opportunity that I'm like not necessarily getting paid or not getting paid well, or even like I have to fundraise to like make the program happen that's been proposed. Mm-hmm. I'm motivated and inspired to run some of these programs. Mm-hmm. And I think basically it was just that, you know, people were asking me to come teach and I said yes.
Amazing. Which yeah. Now has kind of evolved into the new nonprofit. So do you want to share a little bit about what that is?
Yeah, absolutely. So Worldwide Women of Whitewater, or WOW.
Wow.
Wow. is the nonprofit organization that I was part of starting over the winter. And basically it kind of stemmed from that, you know, I would get these requests to teach all of these different programs, and oftentimes they were women's only programs, and sometimes they were in developing countries. And it would be the kind of thing, like I was just mentioning, like sometimes I would get paid, sometimes I would get prorated, sometimes I would have to like fundraise from the ground up to make this thing happen. And the one particular one that I'm thinking of is what we call Nari Naka, which means women's boat in Hindi. And it's a program in India that actually my best friend dreamed up. She was, you know, she got to go run the Ganga River in India, the sacred Ganges River. And she was like, wow, this is really cool. There are no women guiding here. And she asked the company that, you know, she was working with there. She said, hey, you know, why are there no women raft guides? And they said, oh, well, women don't guide. And she said, yeah, they do. I'm a guide. And they said, well, Indian women don't guide. And she said, no, no, they will. And you could be the first. And so the company said, oh, okay, we'll help you put this program together. And she called me and was like, hey, I need you to run an all women's guide school in India with me. And I was like, girl, are you insane? I don't have time for that. Okay, fine. I'll make it work.
Yeah, exactly.
And basically, like, you know, I'm not quite sure how, but we pulled it together and we pulled it off. And we were, so last year we fundraised under a small nonprofit in California that focuses on youth raft racing. And it was really great, but and we were super stoked to partner with them. But this year, when we were looking to run the second round of the program, like it wasn't working out as well to fundraise with them and, or, you know, under them, like umbrella under them. And I had kept thinking that eventually, you know, what I do needs a nonprofit to actually like make sure that all these programs can run and to support them and fund them. And so basically it was just the time was ripe that we were needing to fundraise. And and I'd also just had a course in Costa Rica cancel. So I had, you know, I was home for a month, surprise. And so I said, you know what, I'm just going to press send. And so I did. Filed for articles of incorporation and learned how to read legalese.
Yeah.
No, I didn't really. I just, oh my God, my brain still swims from it. And tax forms and all these other things that I have absolutely zero skill sets in. but we got it off the ground. And we had a great team, you know, that was helping us get it going. Mm-hmm. And we managed to get that first program off the ground. So the second round of Narinaka happened in March.
Great.
And it was the kind of thing where we had a big chunk of funding fall through. We were working with the Indian government, the local tourism department, and the funding from them ended up falling through. So we ended up only being able to run about half the program. But it was still just incredibly powerful and impactful. And we were working with a lot of the girls from last year on just kind of like, you know, next step and leveling up for them. And it was really amazing just to see like how far they had progressed and, you know, like the ones, like how far the ones that had support had progressed and like how the ones that didn't have support had progressed, but like it was a lot harder for them. So they hadn't gotten as far. And I don't know. And I definitely, it was also a really big learning curve for me in terms of recognizing the types of barriers that these women are dealing with. Cause like, I know full well the types of barriers that I dealt with as a, you know, white middle-class woman in the US, you know, but realizing.
Can you share some of them? Of what their barriers are?
So, I mean, some of it is just cultural. And a lot of it is cultural and just like learning about different cultures. Like, you know, you take Indian culture and then you put raft guide culture on top of it. And it's this like whole world. And then also recognizing that, like, again, like some of these girls, they come from families of raft guides and their families support them. And then the other ones don't, and their families, you know, are not supporting them and not wanting them to become raft guides. And, you know, and a lot of these girls are also college age and trying to balance school and, you know, their passion of whitewater. And, and like I say, just, I think so much of it is just for me, like, yeah, learning more about Indian culture. And also the more I work in like South and Central American countries, the more I learn about culture there. And again, it's like, you know, we have our preconceived notions of what any country's culture is. And then, you know, learning what their culture actually is, and then what aspects of those culture are affecting raft guide culture, and raft guide culture is almost the same everywhere. Everywhere I've been, it's like, doesn't matter what culture you're in, raft guide culture is raft guide culture.
Wait, can you say more about that? What is the raft guide culture? I'm so curious.
I mean, you know, unfortunately, some of that is just like the stereotype of, you know, like I know we sometimes joke that, you know, like rafting culture is really like a drinking culture with a rafting problem. and that, you know, it's so often a very like machismo space. Mm-hmm. And again, even in areas where like there are a lot more women on the river, it's still male dominated. Like even on, you know, my river, we have probably close to half women raft guides, maybe not quite, but it's certainly like, you know, like that's huge. We're like, hey, we're getting close to half.
Yeah.
You know? And so, yeah, just still a lot of that machismo culture. Oftentimes a lot of the drinking culture. I mean, it's like you can be anywhere in the world and sit around a campfire with a bunch of raft guides and you're all going to be talking about how big that hole was.
Yeah. Yeah. Or what the line was, or how you would do it different. Or I think it is interesting. I think even, you know, I've just been guiding the last 4 years, but it's been interesting to see this shift, even at least on the West Coast, of maybe a little less drinking, more safety minded, or at least like the places that I've been kind of with. And I think it's due to, you know, people like you or people like Zach who are kind of trying to change that in the industry and yes. bring it more safety. And I mean, you even mentioned like sober boating. I think more accident reports have come out on American Whitewater and just shown like, no, this is causing fatalities. This is causing issues. And so I really think it's just important to touch on that and just say, yeah, like sober boating is kind of awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. And no, I think you're right. I think it is, you know, a product of folks like Zach and myself very intentionally trying to shift the culture and mm-hmm. creating a, you know, a more of a safe space culture at our own companies. And mm-hmm. that when our, you know, staff go out and work other rivers and at other companies, they're taking that with them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I'm sure there are other company owners out there who are also very intentionally doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. And it's, yeah. And well, and then the other thing for me is because I end up working with guides from all different companies, like I try to instill that in every instructor that mm-hmm. I send home to another company. It's like, we are trying to shift the culture. We are trying to make it a safer space, you know, and not just a safer space for like genuinely having a fun day on the river without any incidences occurring, but mm-hmm. also a safer space for like people to feel welcome. And because I mean, the thing is like nature's for everyone, right? The river is mm. for everyone. Yeah. And it's like so often in outdoor sports, not just the whitewater industry, but in outdoor sports across the board, especially in the Western world, we have like, there's often like a gatekeeping kind of sense to it. But in all reality, like all bodies belong outdoors, all people belong outdoors, you know, mm-hmm. And, you know, like, so often too, it's like, it's not just a male space, but it's a white space. And like, you know, here I am a white woman going like, yeah, like I exist in this white space. But trying to make it inclusive for people who don't always feel welcome. And yeah, just like I say, making it like literally safer out on the water and then mm-hmm. be a safer space for anyone to feel welcome, because the river literally is, it, you know, rivers belong to all of us. It's, uh-huh. it's part of nature and we are part of nature.
I love so many of the things that you just said. And I think, you know, just to tie that all together in my mind, it's like the river does exist for everyone. And I think it's so cool that you've been able to see that multiple cultures, you know, throughout the entire world, that rivers really do bring people together. And even just thinking, you know, okay, all the women that you're helping teach in India, how, you know, they do have a love of whitewater and how, you know, it does belong to everyone. Because it's funny, because when I think, okay, it's almost like I don't even think about rivers outside of where I am. But to know that there are rivers everywhere and that, yes, okay, I can travel to India or I could travel to Nepal or Bhutan or Costa Rica and I can go raft and do and kayak and all that kind of things, but that people there want to do it too and have the same love and that we have that same love for that space. It's just so cool to hear. And again, I just think I'm just so excited that more people are getting into the sport, because I have seen the gatekeeping. I have experienced the gatekeeping, and it's just, it doesn't serve anyone. And so what I also kind of want to touch on is, you know, a little bit is the importance of an all-female space and how that kind of brings everybody up, and how just learning in a safe environment, because there is a difference. It is a different feeling. And so if you could just touch on, you know, what are your favorite things about an all-female space?
Yeah. So interestingly, you know, like I said, that's a whole nother story. I guess I'm going to start on this story. I never had all female spaces. For me, like I was often the only woman working at whatever rafting company I was at. At one point, I was literally the only female raft guide in the entire country that I was working in. You know, oftentimes I would be like one of three women working on the entire river I was on. It was, you know, I was usually the token girl. Mm-hmm. And so I, you know, very much could hold my own amongst the boys, and, you know, and I get along with guys just fine. And I, you know, like I never really saw an issue with it. But then it was, interestingly, I was working for a company that had a number of female guides, and it was a high water year, and all the other girl guides came to me and asked if I would take them out and help them on flip and recovery because it was high water and they were nervous and, you know, none of them had practiced in a while. And I was like, yeah, sure. Cool. So like we took my personal boat out to a pond one evening and we just messed around and like, you know, trying to figure out like, oh, what is the best way to climb in and what is the best body position for getting the boat back over? And it was mind blowing. Like that evening literally changed my life. And it was, I was totally my, it felt like a safe space. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I was mind blown. I was utterly mind blown. I'd never experienced anything even remotely close to it before. There was no judgment. There was no competition. It was just all of us trying to figure out the best way to do it. Mm-hmm. And the best way that worked for each of us. And like, you know, one of the girls was just recovering from shoulder surgery and, you know, another one hadn't tried climbing up on a boat in years. And like, it was amazing. And so I went to my boss and I said, hey, I think you need to be running all women's clinics. And he was like, yeah, whatever. And I was like, no, I really think you need to be running women's clinics. And he was like, well, look, whatever. And I kept bugging him. And eventually he looked at me one day and he said, you know what you need? You need your own river permit. And I'm not sure if he like meant it in an inspirational way, but I took it in an inspirational way. And I went and got my own river permit and I started Canyon River Instruction. And it's like I say, literally that evening changed my life, changed the trajectory of my entire life. And CRI's women's clinics have been our kind of flagship clinics. Interesting, like all of our women's rowing clinics are sold out with wait lists and all of our regular rowing clinics have plenty of space in them.
Uh-huh. That's interesting.
Yeah. And so, you know, when talking about that, you know, like what is the benefit there? So I actually just yesterday finished up a 3-day women's rowing clinic, and a number of the women in this clinic were women who had like married raft guides or whose husbands had been boaters for a long time. And they were finally like, you know what, I want to be rowing too. And I struggle to learn from my husband. So I want to come learn from a bunch of other women. And, mm-hmm. and I think like, you know, A, it's so hard for us to learn from like our spouses and our parents and our siblings and whatnot, just in general. And so, you know, having like going somewhere for professional instruction as opposed to just trying to learn from someone who you're going to struggle with.
Yes. Yes.
and then B, I think part of what makes the women's spaces so impactful for women is, like I mentioned earlier, is the like, there's like a lack of judgment. Like when you mess up, you know, the other people in the class are going to be like, hey, it's okay. You can try again. Mm-hmm. Or like, you know, I know you got this. It's okay. Look, I messed up last time too. Or like there's a level of support there that, you know, and I know that when I was a young guide, I was terrified of messing up because it was like, because I was a girl, like I had to be twice as good in mm-hmm. order to get half the respect. Mm-hmm. Like if I wanted to work the class 4 stretches of river, I had to be perfect. Like I couldn't like there was no margin for error for me. And, mm-hmm. and I think that like in these women's spaces, like the participants allow each other margin mm-hmm. for error, which mm-hmm. gives more room for growth and more, like it gives them more confidence. and it gives them the ability to make mistakes, which obviously we all know that's part of learning, right? You're not going, like, no baby learns to walk without falling down.
Yeah.
And so, like, that's just like making mistakes is part of the learning process. We don't learn without making mistakes. And mm-hmm. so often I feel like within kind of these, you know, more high adventure kind of macho arenas, mm-hmm. making mistakes is not acceptable. And, you know, and like kind of to, I guess, that cultural credit, like there are times when making a mistake can be fatal, right? But at the same time, that's also why we give ourselves, you know, arenas in which to fail safely. Like, mm-hmm. for example, yesterday, you know, I had a student who actually, we had two boats high side off of the same rock. but it was great because it was like, you know, I know this is a notorious rock. I knew she was headed straight for it sideways. And I wasn't about to tell her anything different except for high side.
Yeah.
Because in that zone, it's a place where we, you know, I knew that she could fail safely. Like, mm-hmm. I know this rock. I know what it does. I know mm-hmm. that if we high side, we can just like around it. And the students are going to learn a lot. They're going to see that high side works. They're going to learn mm-hmm. that you don't hit rock sideways. Mm-hmm. And whereas that's the kind of thing that, you know, maybe if they were out on their own or out with their husband, they wouldn't have known to high side. They, or, you know, like who knows? And they could have right. flipped and it could have been bad. But again, like having that, having those kind of like parameters within which you can fail safely creates mm-hmm. a greater learning space. And the more that people out there on the river, men, women, or otherwise, are properly trained and have had these opportunities to fail safely, the more they're going to learn and the safer they're going to be. And, you know, the better time everyone's going to have on the river.
Well, and I also, yes. And I think that the greatest gift we can do in any situation is just to like be ourselves. Cause I truly believe that everyone has something to add. And I know myself when I'm in like a new situation, I find it's easier to connect with women. And so I can do that. And I learn in a female space, or, you know, whoever learns in a female space, and then you exit that and you're able to just show up with like, I know what I'm doing. I feel confident. And that then empowers, I feel like, everyone to just be like, okay, we're all good. We can all be ourselves. We don't have to prove anything to anyone. And so I think that that just, you know, that's what I was thinking as well as you were talking, is just like, yes, because everyone can then show up as themselves. And I also want to touch on, you know, you mentioned, okay, everyone makes mistakes, right? And I do feel like, you know, especially from private boating and like growing up private boating, you know, and you mentioned it earlier with the stigma of flipping or getting stuck or having carnage or breaking an oar, you know, it instinctually, you know, you feel kind of dumb. And then you realize, okay, all my friends supported me. This was a good opportunity for me to practice recovery, or, you know, whatever it is that happens, you know, everyone's okay, hopefully. With getting rid of the stigma of mistakes on the river or flipping, or, you know, even I think of like kayaking, you know, if I'm like, oh yes, like I kept my hair dry the whole time. It's also kind of like, well, it's also kind of sick if I roll, because then I know I can roll, you know, and it's really not that big of a deal. But for you and teaching and, you know, removing the stigma, I guess I just am curious, like, is it possible that we can remove the stigma? Is it, you know, what does it take for people? And I mean, I'm really asking, you know, for the listeners, you know, they're about to go rafting and they're scared, or maybe they're nervous about this one big rapid. What are techniques that they can use to just be like, okay, I've got this. It's okay. Or does that kind of make sense? I'm just kind of.
Yeah. So I think, you know, one of the really important values that I like to instill in my instructors is vulnerability. And so basically, like, because, you know, when you're in that power dynamic of student and instructor, as the instructor, you're like the deity that the student is looking up to. And when you can be vulnerable and also make mistakes, then that allows the student space to make mistakes and learn from them. And, you know, like a great example is like our water was dropping over the last couple of days. And some of our students were getting really frustrated with getting stuck on rocks. And I was like, yeah, well, remember day one, I got stuck on a rock right away, like falling out of the eddy. I got us stuck on a rock, you know? So, and just like, basically like allowing that space for mistakes to be okay. And also, you know, like another big thing is oftentimes I'll see instructors just kind of like bullshit an answer if they don't know the answer. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, you can say, hey, I don't know. Let's maybe look that up or let's find out. Like, you don't have to, BS your way through it. And just like that alone gives a sense of like trust with the student. And I think to kind of segue that into, you know, kind of like the final piece of your question there, like if a person is out looking at a big rapid and being nervous, I think a couple of things come to mind for me. Number one is, like, if you're scouting a big rapid that's making you nervous, don't look at, like, if you're scouting lava, don't look at the ledge hole.
Yeah.
Look at the bubble line. Like, look where you want to go. So it's so easy to fixate on that, you know, the piece of the rapid that we want to avoid that is the hazard, as opposed to the line where we want to go that avoids the hazard. And so, you know, number one, like really focus on your line, really envision making those maneuvers to make that line happen, really pick out markers, like be very intentional with your markers. And I don't mean like that tree over there or that square rock, because you're not going to be looking at the shore. You're going to be looking at your line. So look for that bubble line, look for that one little lateral that's going to be coming off of the left shore. Look for those markers that are going to be in line with where you're going, and look where you want to be going. And then another thing too, is just like working up to that point, make hard moves in easy whitewater, because when you know that you can hit class four moves in class three whitewater, when it's a must make move in class four, you know, you can make it. Hard moves in easy whitewater. Run through a class two rapid, like it's the, you know, like make every unnecessary move possible. Catch every eddy. Turn that little class two rapid into more maneuvers than you knew possible. Hard moves in easy water.
That gets me so jazzed up. I'm like immediately picturing all the rapids I could run. I love that. Yeah, that's. Yeah. And that just makes it so fun. And that's what this sport is. That's what rivers are. It's just fun. And it's a way to connect with nature and connect with the people you're around. Yeah, it's awesome. I'm really grateful that A, you had time to talk today in your busy, you know, instruction travel schedule. I really appreciate it. And I also just love all of the tips that you gave, the way that you shared it. And it's really cool to hear the ways that more people are getting into the sport, more people are learning how to instruct. And I think good instructors really are what make the difference between people investing in the sport and wanting to get into the sport versus, you know, I had a student come and they were like, I was on a rowing school and the instructor yelled at me that I didn't make the line. It was crazy.
Yeah. See, so that's not the kind of culture we're wanting to facilitate.
No. And it's so clear. And I'm really excited about the direction that instruction is going, whitewater is going, and the emphasis on safety so that more people can keep doing this. So yeah, thanks for what you're doing. It's so fun to hear about. And I'm excited for more people to look up CRI and look up WOW, Worldwide Women of Whitewater. And yeah, it's awesome. Great. So thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for reaching out. And I'm super glad that we were actually able to find a time that worked. And thank you for your patience with my schedule.
I love it. I love it. Keep everything you're doing going on, because it's great. And hopefully I'll make it out to Colorado one day.
Yeah. Give me a shout. Love to go boating with you.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And we'll see you next time.
All right. Bye. Take care.